Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, one of the few black-owned radio networks that addresses the issues with solutions in the black community. Present Black Urban America. All you folks that listen by laptops or what have you, if you have a comment or a question, you can dial 516-531-9540 and press 1. This is the lineup. For Black Urban America, I'm your host, Kenny Jones, and come on every Tuesday. Every second Tuesday, starting in March, Radio Talk with Chicago by Emma Young. She's a producer on one of the radio stations out there. On every third Tuesday, we have What's Happening in Milwaukee. And Ms. Bev Williams is hosting that show. And she's been bringing up a lot of issues from Milwaukee and the stuff, a lot of stuff been going on in Milwaukee. On Thursdays, we have returning Part of Harlem magazine by Mr. Wayne A. Young. And, of course, on Saturdays, we have Provocative Thought by Carter Steve. All programs begin at 8 p.m. Tonight, we are discussing a very serious issue. I mean, all the issues that discuss on Black Urban America is serious, but this concern our youth that's going on in the last 10, 15 years, well, longer than that. Since 2008, suicide among black youth is the second leading cause of death. Between 1991 to 2017, black teen suicide has increased 73%. Also, the level of mental illness among black youth has also increased. Tonight, to discuss this issue, it's a child teen therapist by the name of Miss Lisa Salvage Phillips. Welcome to Black Urban America, Miss Phillips.
Thank you very much, Kenny. It's great to be here with you.
Good, good. It's great to be here with you, too. Let's get right on with it. Why is this issue receiving more attention and compared to 20 years ago? And this thing and this issue has been on the rise since the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. That's a very good question. So for a long time, suicide was not an issue that researchers, mental health professionals thought affected black youth. It wasn't
until recently. And also black folks too, black adults too.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Congressional Black Caucus did a study because they saw or were concerned about the rise in the rate. And so now it's being pushed to the forefront. It's an issue that we can no longer ignore or pretend doesn't exist because black people are killing themselves. So
at least recently, a 73% increase?
It's very high.
My God.
Very high. Yeah.
I mean,
yes,
I
very
wasn't
high.
Even aware. Now, I know, I know black youth have their issues or what have you. I know about high homicidal rate and all of that. But I didn't know the suicide rate was that high.
Yeah.
Has increased so much.
We don't talk about
can you
that
tell
much,
me,
right?
Can so you tell me what is the percentage of black youth that make attempts or think about suicide?
Well, I don't have the exact number. What I can tell you, though, is that when a black boy in particular attempts to hurt himself, it is more lethal than any other population. And so that's very concerning to me, which means it's either a gun.
Say that again, Lisa. Are you saying, well, a black boy make a decision Well, I'm going to end it all. You say it's more lethal than any other culture? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was under the speculation. You know, at one time in our culture, we always thought suicide was a white culture thing.
Right, right, right. And I think that's what has made this even more difficult for us to understand as we start to hear more about suicide in Black communities, is that we have typically thought of it as being a white thing, not a white thing. Unfortunately, we are seeing more of our people who are dying by complete suicide.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. So when a Black kid decides to, a Black male decides to hurt himself, it's more lethal than when, say, a white girl decides to hurt herself. And so
they just like to take the pills, so we'll shoot ourselves.
Right. 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 Or hang ourselves. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it makes the risk of dying really high once that.
Well, why aren't African American youth diagnosed, have a more evaluations and diagnosed?
Yeah.
Compared to other
cultures. There's a lot of reasons for that. A couple of reasons are, you know, the stigma of mental health. So
we still got that stigma.
Like to go into
we still got that stigma.
Mm-hmm. Did you say talk about the stigma?
I said we still have that stigma.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's, I mean, not to the extent that it once was, but it's still a stigma around getting help or talking to somebody about your private business. So there's still a lot of secrecy and quietness in our communities so that children get the message, this is not something you're supposed to talk about. We keep this inside. Then there's a lack of mental health providers who work with kids. Then when you're talking about Black communities, there's even less resources for mental health services. Or there are wait lists. And by the time a child gets pulled from the wait list, it may be too late.
Yeah. Yeah, the wait list, they still have a long wait. I know 30 years ago, they always had long waiting lists. Usually take you 3 months to either get an evaluation and then find a therapist or a child psychologist, even more. And let me, now I'm getting off my script. I just want to ask you this. Are there more African-American therapists, child psychiatrists, and psychologists that are available
to
our population?
No. So out of all of the mental health professionals across the country, only 4% are Black or brown people. 4% across the board.
There was more people. So while there was more child psychiatrists. There was more Black therapists back in the 90s.
It's changed. So, you know, and that makes the issue even more dire because children
you
can't,
said
40% or families can't
or
find 4%.
Help. You said 40% or 4%.
No, 4. 4. 4. Mm-hmm. So we represent
I just learned this morning, out of all the teachers in the country, it's only 6% are Black. I thought the number was higher. And about a month ago, I had somebody on here, and we were talk about the direction our culture, Black African-Americans are going. And I said something, and the person got angry with me. I said, it looks like we're going backwards a little bit here, you know, because we talked about integration, assimilation, what have you. And understand me, you are in the heart of the community. Cause you talk about Baltimore, right?
Well, I live in Baltimore, but my practice is located in Delaware. So while I'm aware of the issues that are going on here in Baltimore, I'm more familiar with what's happening in the state of Delaware. Yeah, yeah. Baltimore is just as bad.
That's a long commute.
Because, yeah. Well, fortunately, I don't have to do it every week like I was. We're working virtually now because of the pandemic. But
right.
I will be going back to that commute once it's safer to do that.
So why
the children are suffering regardless of where they are.
Now I'm going to get a little personal. Again, I just went off script. This question is not on my list of questions. Now I'm going to get a little personal mm-hmm. with you, and please just be honest with me. Why Delaware compared to Baltimore? It seems that you would be more needed, your services would be more needed in Baltimore because there's a lot of dysfunctional families in Baltimore.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you speak of Delaware, you speak of Delaware. My nephew lives in Delaware. I think of middle-class black folks.
Partly, yeah. I mean, but we do have areas, where there's poverty and high crime rates. The city of Wilmington, for example, some of the smaller towns struggle.
But that's only 3 blocks long compared to the whole city. Come
well,
on,
yeah.
Hold on, Miss Phillips. It's the difference between 3 miles and a whole city.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me explain how I ended up in Baltimore, because I've only lived here for 5 years. I got married, and my husband owned a business in D.C. I owned my business in Delaware, so Baltimore was the middle point. And what I discovered here in Baltimore is that, you know, there's such need for services here, but it's too hard for me to stretch myself between both states. So Delaware is where my focus is.
Well, you know, you can live in a nice area in Maryland and just like my
mm-hmm.
sister. She works in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
She lives in a beautiful area of Maryland, and she worked on the
mm-hmm.
front lines of Baltimore. I asked her what
she
was going to buy. You can't do that for so long.
Yeah, that's true. Does
so
she like it?
What type of crisis usually is happening with the average African, not average, but with the African or average African-American youth? What's going on in his life that they want to say, I want to end it all?
Well, I mean, people usually get to that point where they begin to feel hopeless. They begin to feel like their situation isn't going to change. However, one of the things that I've learned from my research is that when a child, black youth, decides that they're going to kill themselves, usually it's a very impulsive decision. It's either after an argument with someone that they love, or they may have failed a test. But it usually, it's not something, generally speaking, that a lot of thought has been put into it. But our children are faced with a lot of exposure to stress, so chronic stress, maybe
parental
incarceration.
Yeah, I'm about to get to that in a couple of minutes. I'm about to get
mm-hmm.
to the risk stressors in a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, that's my next question. What are the risk factors of black youth suicide? Hold up. Hold up. You said something a minute ago that I caught it, but I said, oh, she just saying that as an example in my head. But I got to ask you, a kid want to take his life because
mm-hmm.
they failed the test?
Mm-hmm.
No,
yeah.
Failed the
yeah.
test. Like, they got an F on it, and
mm-hmm.
you know how many tests I failed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly. But,
whoa.
You know, if you think about the pressure that kids are under, you know, they're under a lot of pressure. If they have personalities that are perfectionistic, failing a test could be catastrophic for them.
Miss Filler, let's take Baltimore. It's Baltimore City.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm just putting this, again, I'm off script. I do that a lot. You know, when somebody say something, you know, I had to address it just to satisfy
uh-huh.
my thinking. Let's say Baltimore City. I say about 70% of Baltimore black families are low income or working income families. Now, it has been assessed that in these type of, and I don't want to stereotype, because I did work with them and everything. In most of these families, education is not a priority. So, some of the kids don't even go to school. Making that money is a priority. Economics is a priority.
Yeah, I mean, there are...
Now, if you would have said something like,
I see a lot of broke
his heart, I would take that more than the books.
Well, it varies from, you know, child to child.
Among black youth like the city of Baltimore, you know, it's cool to be stupid. Per se, it's not popular to be smart.
Yeah, but imagine being a smart kid and wanting to be.
Then you might have problems
and struggling. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean,
with your socialization,
peer pressure
with the peer grouping,
definitely going to be an issue.
Yeah, being accepted with the peer group, with the socialization skills. And what have you?
Yeah.
It might be a little awkward because most attention had been spent in the classroom, you know, addressing your educational needs. Might be shy.
Yep.
I'm sorry. Yep. What are the risk factors of black youth suicide? I asked that question. We got off.
Yeah. Depression, anxiety. Lack of family support, lack of peer support, no one to turn to, poverty, experiencing community violence, trauma. Those are all risk factors. I see that a lot here in Baltimore.
Okay. Again, I'm going to get off the script again. I was doing some research for the show. I do that to all my shows. Whatever you want to discuss, I'm going into the lab and I'm researching. And I come out with all these notes, and from the notes I do the question. I've seen drama, violence, anxiety, depression. Nothing, anything about family. The structure of the family. And we had just mentioned that too, about the structure of the family. You know? So for me to say that, you know, well, they even put it on racism, you know, which I'm gonna ask a few minutes down. But what you just mentioned sound like our responsibility.
Sounds like our responsibility. Oh,
yeah, black.
It does. It does. It does fall on us. I mean, racism does play a huge role in a lot of this in very subtle ways. It plays a huge role. It does fall on us.
Yeah, with the educational system, lack of resources, and the juvenile justice system in a little while. If we could get through this, we wouldn't be interrupting you with these little scenarios.
But when you have a family system that where either one parent is incarcerated or the parents are compromised because of substance abuse or their own mental health or poverty, it makes it really hard for them to show up and support their child. And so a lot of times kids are out there struggling on their own.
It's something I learned from another a psychologist about 3-4 months ago, multi-generational drama.
Yep, you got it.
You said mental illness in
the
family, grandparent, mom, child, And nine times out of ten, in those cities like Philadelphia, you got that great grandchild, that child right there.
Yeah, but it starts, it goes back further. It goes back to slavery. It goes back to the trauma that black people experienced from slavery. And, you know, slavery wasn't that long ago when you start to think about, you look back on the generations, it really wasn't that long ago. And so we still have not recovered from the emotional and psychological damage that being enslaved people has done to us as a whole.
But we
so
still
lack
carry
of self-esteem, lack of self-worth.
Yeah, sometimes, and we still carry the some behaviors of slavery, too. Even in 2022, even though it's a different century, we do, you know, we still got some change, and it might be more emotional and mental, but we still got some change to slavery back then, the family structure. So what type of drama, T-R-A-U-M-A, are the youth facing that is contributing to suicide attempts and maybe one and suicide? What type of drama? You said family structure, mental illness, one of the parents in prison.
Poverty is trauma.
Yeah.
Living in a neighborhood where there's chronic violence, having a parent who's incarcerated, those are all traumatic. They land traumatically on a child. And what happens is when you've been through a lot of trauma, your brain starts to change, your body starts to change, and it can cause emotional and mental health issues amongst other physical ailments as well. So a lot of children who have learning problems, especially in highly traumatized communities, really, it's their brain that has been overtaxed by trauma, ongoing trauma. So the trauma doesn't lessen up. And so their brain, their bodies become impacted. And so we have kids, you know, in schools that are diagnosed as being in special ed, when in reality, these children have had brain changes because of the chronic stress and exposure to trauma that they've endured.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm glad you mentioned that, Lisa. There was an article that I read like around Thanksgiving. And they survey or evaluate police officers that work in predominantly black and brown communities, preferably African-American communities. No, I should say low-income, working-income African-American communities.
Okay.
Like how North Philly used to be. Or how Baltimore is. Or the 7th Ward, or the 7th Ward in Washington, D.C. I know about that, huh? They said after an 8-hour shift, police officers suffer or experience PTSD after an 8-hour shift. Can you imagine? When I read that, I said, well, how about the kids? How about the kids?
There you go. Yes, exactly. Imagine a kid living in this. Round the clock, 24/7. Imagine what that does to a brain.
Reason why I'm a single mother, I know the statistics, but like, because this statistic has not changed. 72% of black families are headed by single mothers. How about that? With the economics and the poverty and the crime, all that, I guess, have an impact not only on the mental stability of the child, but on the developmental of the child.
I mean, the trauma of it is, and it's It's more than them being parented by a single mom. It's the absent parent, too, and how they interpret that absent parent and what that does to the family structure. So if you have a single parent, regardless of whether or not it's the mom or the dad, they're going to struggle more than likely economically. And then
right.
the children are going to wonder, where is the other parent? Why is it my parent here to take care of me? Does my parent love me? Does my parent care about me? And that causes a lot of depression in kids because often there are no answers for why the parent is missing. Either the present parent isn't talking about it, or they don't know where the missing parent is.
What? Are black kids easily depressed?
Are they deeply depressed, did you say?
Easily.
I don't know that they're easily depressed, but I think that they are at risk for depression, you know, generally speaking. Not every black kid, but generally speaking. Depression is, it's a condition, it's a catch-all term. So do we all feel sad from time to time? Yes. Do some kids' sadness persist and then it turns into depression? Yes, that is absolutely correct. Can it be treated? Yes. Is it often treated in children? No.
No.
For a lot of reasons. And part of it is there are not a lot of mental health providers that work with kids, or kids don't have easy access to mental health services, or parents don't believe in it, or parents can't afford mental health services. Because that's another
thing. Every time you go in the office, you got to pay a copay. And sometimes, you know.
Correct. And sometimes
you may not have that
copay. Really yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So, tell me this. Let's go back to depression.
Mm-hmm.
What is some of the major causes of depression among black youth?
So a lot of the things that I said, you know, disconnection from their parents. So if a child perceives that their parent has emotionally disconnected from them on some level, that can definitely cause depression. A lot of times parents get caught up in their own struggles. You know, they may be working hard. They may not be emotionally available to their child for whatever reason. That can cause depression in children. So when I see an angry child, and oftentimes you'll see kids in schools who are angry, what's underneath that anger really is depression. That just hasn't, the child doesn't have the words to say, I'm sad, I'm frustrated, I don't feel cared about by my parent. So that's what causes, those are some of the causes of depression.
I never thought
yeah.
about it that way. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell me,
so when we were
can
working
we talk about anxiety for a little minute? Define anxiety to me, not just to me, but to the audience. Define and what may cause someone to be anxious. That anxiety, that term anxiety, I always had a problem with of defining mm-hmm. what is anxiety. And what are some of the causes of someone to become anxious? Now, how
yeah,
is that part of mental illness? Well, that was
so there
question.
Are various types of anxiety, but anxiety is the persistent fear of something bad is going to happen. So they
really?
Can walk around having physical symptoms like rapid heartbeat, shakiness, sweatiness, overly concerned about their performance in school or at home. And so those are kind of a catch-all symptoms of what anxiety looks like. Anxiety is caused by experiencing some traumatic event that maybe the person didn't feel like they had any control over, or traumatic events that were persistent, events that went on and on. So maybe domestic violence in a household, or a parent who is in and out of the household. can be caused by medical issues. So if a child has gone through a bad medical experience.
Not having food in the household.
Not having food, food insecurity absolutely will cause anxiety and depression. You know, parents who move a lot, so housing insecurity, that can certainly cause anxiety. Lack of stability in a person.
How about a family living in a homeless shelter?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. The death of a loved one. So, you know, a parent dying at a young age, that can cause a child to have anxiety as well.
So, Lisa, this anxiety, the way you define it, must be running rampant through our community, especially with all this violence.
It's bad. It is bad, and it's probably underreported. We probably don't know how bad anxiety is. So some of the ways it shows up in kids is overeating. That's a sign of could be a sign.
And we got
of
a lot of obese children today.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of we got a high rate of child diabetes.
Yeah. And it's not because these kids it's because they're not eating well, but it's also because how they're using food. And so they're using food as an emotional outlet. So when I'm driving through Baltimore and I see children who are obese or overweight, the first thing I think about is what's going on in that child's life that has caused this child to misuse food. And a lot of times it's for comfort, and which is why you're seeing such high rates of diabetes and high blood pressure increasing in kids as well. But who's educating their parents about this? Where is that happening? How are parents to understand
I was gonna ask you
that it's the stress?
I was going to ask you that later on.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
What you just said is led right into what I'm about to ask. How can a parent or neighbor or youth football coach or teacher, well, teachers should be trained.
Uh-huh.
How can they, how can a parent identify if their child is going through any of these factors?
So like parents know their kids better than anybody. And if we know that our kids' behavior has changed one way or the other, it's always a red flag for something. It may not be anxiety or depression. It could be something. Maybe they're stressed out. Maybe they broke up with their partner. But knowing your child and being attuned to that child, you as a parent will know when there's changes. If you're not attuned to your child, you're not going to notice those changes, those subtle changes in your child, which is only going to exacerbate the anxiety and depression. And so any changes like irritability, isolating more, not doing things that they once liked to do, any changes in their sleep habits or eat habits, typically are red flags. Not any one of them doesn't necessarily mean there's a problem, but when you start to see a couple of those signs and they persist for more than a week or so, that's a call to action on the parent's part to say to your child, how are you feeling?
And one word that you use
is
persistent. There's one word that you keep on using to describe some of these risk factors. It's persistent. It's a continuation.
You got it, Kenny. Yep. Because kids change, right? So kids are developing and they're growing.
Yeah.
And so what you might see today may be different tomorrow. But if it's a persistent, if it lasts more than a week or two, that could be an indication that something's going on. If your child won't talk to you, and sometimes kids won't, maybe they'll talk to a trusted family member. Maybe they'll talk to the church pastor. Maybe they'll talk to a school counselor. But they also might need to be seen by a therapist as well, because there are things that a therapist can do to really get to the the root of what's going on with that child.
Yeah. Wow, this is... How about, we touched on this earlier, how about the exposure of violence when we talked about PTSD? How is... How does violence, I know... the way you define anxiety, depression, you know, and the high rate of violence in our neighborhoods and kids. How about gangs? Trying to avoid gangs. Can that be a stress factor? So how about the level of violence among youth? How is that playing all into the anxiety and the depression?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Trauma.
Yeah. So if a black person hears about, I'll use this as an example, a black person in another town, another city, being killed, that person experiences anxiety. And it impacts them emotionally. So when we all heard about George Floyd being killed by the police officers, I mean, I don't know too many black people that didn't feel that on a different level, especially those of us who are parents of black boys. So you don't even have to directly witness the killing, the murder of someone else who's black in order to feel it and have it impact you emotionally. But when you're talking about that crime going on in the neighborhood,
that respond differently, that they're immune and doesn't, they'll have no affect about, like you said, almost every black person in this country were it touched them some kind of way, but there were some blacks. It didn't bother them because it's a part of their daily living.
Yeah. They become immune. They become numb.
Yeah. Immune.
Yeah.
So is
that's not good either. Because
does that play into
being
like...
We're emotional beings.
Wow.
What were you saying about that?
That being immune to it. Like, for example, I'm going to use me for example. Like, it didn't affect me as it did the whole country.
Mm-hmm.
I see guys get shot by police.
There you go.
I had a childhood friend that he still get nerves where a cop car come up beside his car. Because when he was 15 years old, a cop put a shotgun right in his face and said it was the wrong, identification, but they thought they was robbers and everything. And he said, if you move, I'll blow your head off. So, so being immune because of, is that part of the PTSD? Because you see
it
so much, it
doesn't
affect you.
Yes, that's a very common side effect of PTSD is the numbing that occurs. And it's sort of your mind's way of, quote-unquote, protecting you from feeling things that are really painful. And so the mind sort of shuts down and allows you to numb your feelings so that you don't have to feel the intensity of the feelings. But feelings don't go away. They get stored. They come out in some other kind of way. So while we think that numbing ourselves is protecting us, it really, in the long run, ends up hurting us.
When we suppress
the feelings. That's how anxiety becomes developed as well. I mean, when people suppress those natural feelings, that can also cause anxiety as well. So there's all this stuff going on around you, and you're numbing, and you're sort of pretending like it's not impacting you, but on the inside it is. That can certainly create anxiety disorder too.
And I know that being a child and you constantly around negative behaviors. And what I mean by negative behaviors, I'm talking about the hanging out on the corner. Well, that always been that's always been. That was happy when I was a kid. The violence, the shootings, people buying drugs. Even though in some cities that is starting to slow down. I guess all that effect. You coming home from school and you see a line of people buying drugs, they gotta mess with you, and you see that on a daily basis.
Oh, absolutely it does. Absolutely it does. What does that say about, how does that person internalize what that says about them because they live in that community? And often it's negative internalization.
Wow. Racial discrimination. Yeah. You mentioned racial discrimination. We talked about race discrimination for about a minute. Can you expand on how does racial, again, everything that you describe and you define this evening, and I think you did a wonderful, I think to be very informative. I'm really enjoying this dialogue and everything.
Oh, good. Thank you.
It doesn't sound like discrimination to me. It sounds like the onus, again, I'm one of the guys that believe in don't ask the government for anything. The government's always trying to get our business. We got to handle this ourselves. These are our kids. These are our these are our communities.
But see,
that's why we're losing it one by one by one.
It's more than
because
we're
not taking responsibility.
Racism is more than just discrimination. Racism is what has caused impoverished neighborhoods. It's what's caused our schools to be inferior. So there's a lot of structural parts to racism that that continue to be impacted. So here in Baltimore, for example, the redlining of neighborhoods is notorious. And so black people literally couldn't move up, even if they wanted to move up. So that's, you know, the structural part of racism, but I mean,
but Ms. Phillips, you use the educational system. I used to be notorious for this until I learned this morning about, but again, we have a lot of black principals. We have a lot of black educators, commissioners and superintendents of school. You mean to tell me we can't start our own schools with African thought with the STEM?
I think there have been some successful models of that, but where does the money come from?
We get money for everything else.
Money comes from the state, right? For charter schools. I mean, there could be private schools, of course, but it still means that parents would have to pay something. Parents often can't afford to pay for a private education.
So therefore, we have to continue. Again, here comes this onus I keep on bringing up. We have to continue because we don't want to sacrifice. So we're going to continue to send our children to these dungeons where we know racial discrimination, racism, institutionalized racism is being practiced on our children. But we as a community, we don't want to sacrifice and send our kids to some educators.
But I want to break that down a little bit further. So
go ahead, break it down for me.
People have lived under trauma and stress for so long, it really does rob them of the ability to think about what choices they have. And so,
yeah, stop getting the nails every week. Stop getting the nails, get your nails done every week or your weave. And put that
towards
child education.
I mean, education is going to cost
like
a lot more.
No, I have to talk about the level of sacrifice.
It's a lot more complicated than that. It's a lot more complicated than that. Yeah. You know, I tend not to get so concerned about what people are doing with their money because, you know, when you're living in an impoverished condition, sometimes the only joy you get is going to get your nails done or getting your hair done. And so you might sacrifice that $50, $60 on doing that because that may be the only joy that you get.
So that's part of your self-care.
Yeah, yeah. That's a really good way to look at it, part of your self-care. But white families don't have to go out and create their own. Their schools are good. I used to work in a school in Wilmington. And I walked in the school, and there was rain pouring into the building, just pouring into the building. It's an all-black school. The white schools in the suburbs didn't have to worry about that. I asked the principal, why won't the district fix this? And she said, because it's a black school, and they don't care. And that was just so shocking to me. These kids didn't
She was honest like that?
Very. Yes, she was. Yes,
and
she
you
was.
You know what my response would have been? You want to know my response would have been?
Mm-hmm.
So how comes some of you black educators ain't getting together and starting your own school where there is care?
I think there is
instructors that look like you.
Mm-hmm. I think in this instance, this principal is really doing the best that she could. She was showing up, you know, taking good care, loving these children who were, you know, had a lot of behavioral problems. But the thought of starting her own school, I mean, that I can't even imagine wrapping my mind around how that.
You mean to tell you can't get four other educators? There's this brother. He has a program on YouTube. His name is Lord Jamar. Lord Jamar. And his father-in-law started a school back in the late 90s with one trailer, with eight students. And now today has a building. He told me the number. I mean, a full-fledged school, you know, and it's African Center, STEM, entrepreneur training.
They're definitely models.
His first class was the first grade. And each year he started a new grade. And that first grade graduated and went to high school. And those kids that started in the first grade, they went to specialized high school in Brooklyn because they were too advanced for a public school high school in New York.
But again, white parents don't have to create their own schools for kids
we have a special condition. We are fighting, and you name it, we're fighting on so many lines, and there are so many simple solutions. But we got two problems. One, we want to get approval by the government, which we always don't have our best interest at hand. Two, We're afraid. We're afraid to step out there. Like I had one teacher on here last year. I said, you talk about all these blackness and everything. How come you and a few teachers aren't starting your own school? She said, money.
What did she say?
Money. The pay. The pay. They're scared. They got used to the lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, you know, I guess we have a lot of black folks that happy Black History Month. Speaking of history, we had a lot of people that died. Hung. My grandfather was hung. Okay? We had a lot of people that died. So we could have these conversations. So we could talk about having our own schools. Talk about having our own businesses. Y'all corporate, we got people that are billionaires. We got black folks that are billionaires now. Yeah, just one group. Five black young doctors started their own clinic. I think right there in Baltimore, too.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But again, what you talk about, where all this anxiety come from that we're scared to step out because we fearful? You mean to tell me the structural racism have affected us so much that we are fearful to fight for ourselves?
I got to replay this. It has played a role in how we, in our mindset. Not all of us, of course, because, you know, like you mentioned, there's several of us who are successful, but there are several of us, lots of us in our communities whose mindset has been negatively impacted by racism. They don't see any options for themselves. They don't see possibilities because they've never experienced it. And so when you haven't experienced anything, you can't even imagine that it's for you as well. And so it takes a lot, like mental health professionals like myself have to work to help empower people and to show people that they do have other choices if that's what they want. But it's hard work when that's what's been passed down generation after generation after generation. Yeah.
Multi-generation drama and multi-generation PTSD.
Yep. You got it.
Let me ask you another question, Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
How about the juvenile justice system?
Say that again.
How about the juvenile justice system? Or the criminal justice system for our youth.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They had a nice little graduate school at one time at Rikers Island. Rikers Island is a city jail in New York.
Mm.
And matter of fact, they had, I mean, just fighting every single day.
Oh.
Instead of the treatment, instead of evaluations and counseling like our white counterpart, we are more likely, black kids are more likely to be put in the juvenile justice system for the same behaviors.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
So
if you don't have money, you know, to get a good lawyer, I mean, what you gonna do? What you gonna do? You're frustrated with your kid. What are you gonna do?
I got one more question, Lisa, before I let you go. What type of trainings do our parents and guardians need in order to identify all these facts? Or Do you feel that we do need regular trainings for our parents to...
I feel like parents need to be educated about trauma so that they can help understand the trauma in themselves and also understand the trauma in their child. I think if we can start there and help parents to connect how trauma impacts parents, because parents have had trauma as well, and then how it shows up in their children as mental health issues, as behavior issues, learning problems, I think then we can begin to make some changes in some things. I think we can empower parents to take charge and to speak up and to be demanding that their child have the best education or have access to the mental health services and other services that they need. So I think that's a huge part, is really educating parents about what this is all about. So, you know, we talk a lot about trauma. I feel like a lot of parents don't know what we mean when we say trauma. They think something huge and catastrophic. They don't think about everyday things that some communities experience as being traumatic and having a negative impact on their child. So
right.
Educating parents is really important. Educating parents about what mental health issues look like in kids, what to do if you think your child has a mental health issue, what to do when if you think your child is at risk for hurting him or herself.
And parents need to ask them. Parents need to ask them.
Sure.
Well, Lisa, that's all we have for this evening. How about give the audience your information if they got more questions for you?
Yeah. Yeah, so they can visit my website at thecenterforchilddevelopment.com. We're located in Newark, Delaware, and once I get to thecenterforchilddevelopment.com, they'll be able to email us or call us. If they're looking for mental health services for themselves or their child, they could go to clinicianscolor.org. Again, clinicianscolor.org, where there's a listing for hundreds of mental health providers of color around the country.
First of all, I want to thank you for all the service that you do for our kids. And Philadelphia needs you. Philadelphia, you need to go up in North Philly, South Philly somewhere.
I'm from Philly, so I know what you mean. I
lived there for 10 years. Philly needs you. I just want to thank you for all the service that you do for our kids, and please try to recruit some black young people to think about becoming mental health clinicians. I know it's not a very high occupation in our culture and everything, but we need it because for what it sounds like, we're suffering, and
yeah,
like I said, a couple months ago, we're going backwards.
Well, it's my
thank you for coming on the show, and I really appreciate you. I enjoyed our conversation. That's all we have tonight, folks. Everybody have a good week. I see you next Tuesday. As always, I am because we are. We are because I am. Good night.